Well, yeah, certainly. I mean, it was our fault. We made a mistake. Spider said it was clear. I wasn't clear, and, you know, I didn't want to tear my car up, tear his car up either. I respect everybody, and I demand respect. And, you know, I apologized to the guy when he came over the car, explained to him what happened, and then he took it to another level when he started calling me an idiot and whatever else. And I don't appreciate that. I'm not going to take it. I told him how I feel. I called him out. He didn't show. You know, so, you know, I'm good with it if he's good with it, but I'm not going to be disrespected by no means.
Yeah, I guess I had a dinner date at Applebee's last night that I didn't find out until it was too late. It's a shame. Love their riblets and boneless wings, but...
All right, folks, welcome back to Meet Me at Applebee's, your number one unrefined motorsports podcast in all of the land. It's Brian here with Rob and Ashley. It's been a busy week. Rob is currently on the road right now with his band. You're Richmond, I think you said. So
yeah, I'm sitting out in front of our bass player and good friend Brady Heck's house, mutual friend of mine and True Love's, and also a NASCAR fan. In fact, we sat down in the basement to watch the Bristol race together on Monday. So we'll get to that in a little bit. But just out here in a van, ripping a podcast. Shows have been great, by the way, for listening to this and you came out to anything over the past couple days. Thank you very much. It's been fucking awesome. I'm sure I'll talk about that later too. But how you doing, True Love? I know you're back. You're back.
I'm back. I'm back.
Mouth.
Yeah, well, you know, working on it. Still healing, yeah. So my talking ain't quite there yet, but
I'll see
what I can do. See what I can do.
Ain't so bad. Well, I'm glad to hear that you're on the mend. We missed you last week. And special thanks to Jay for coming on the show last week.
Yeah, Jay did great. I listened. Y'all did a great job. So,
but we missed the shit out of you, and we're glad you're back. So,
well, y'all did good. You didn't get Jay fired, so.
We did not.
I almost did.
That we know of, anyway.
I accidentally let that slip, but
We edited some stuff out. I got that.
Oh, okay. Well, you'll have to tell me off air what went down.
We got some racing to talk about now.
Yeah.
By the time you're listening to this, it's Thursday. You've already heard 17 million people talk about how good the Bristol race was. And it lived up to every single review, every single YouTube video, highlight reel, whatever. It was for a season that's already been pretty fucking great. I think this is probably my favorite race for reasons that are completely unlike races that we've seen in decades.
Fuck yeah. 100%. Yeah, absolutely. That's what I want to see in an era where, like, you feel like the car limits what we can see on track. And I know this is a complete fucking accident and totally circumstantial because of the temperature and the tire compound they brought. And I know we're going to get into this in, like, 20 seconds, but... yeah, that's exactly what you want to see. And that was a wild fucking race. I love the shit out of every second of that.
We'll save the deep tire discussion for the video of the week segment, because we're going to be talking about tire stuff later. But just as far as the racing itself, I mean, the fact that the drivers, I mean, there was so much chaos. Like, it started off like any other Bristol race. I personally had not been paying a ton of attention. I was busy the last few days myself. So I watched the truck race, which was a good race. It was, you know, another non-embarrassing truck race. It was really, Kyle Busch had some cool moves. He had a good battle with Christian Eckes at the end. Mm-hmm. Great race, but still not even comparable to what we saw Sunday.
And there was a little fight afterwards too.
We should talk about this too. So for the second time in, you know, the last 6, 7, 8 months, whatever, Nick Sanchez got into it with an old guy, this time being Stuart Friesen. Now, did you guys watch the race at all? Rob, you probably didn't, right?
Yeah, I did.
The only thing I saw of this race was when we got back to the hotel after the show at like 2 a.m. or 3 a.m., and I saw a highlight that got sent to our group chat of the accident where Friesen cleared himself off Nick Sanchez's nose, but I was shit-faced, and I don't really like Nick Sanchez, so I sentenced him to death by the hands of Stuart Friesen for that.
So,
but that was probably incorrect to say that. So.
Yes, so I had the race on, and I was listening to Stewart's radio at the time. I tuned it in right after that happened, and on the radio in that moment, he more or less admitted that it was his fault. He was like apologizing to his crew and that he screwed up and he like shouldn't have moved up on him. And I don't know where the fuck the car was to tell him, like, you know, stay in your lane. He's right there. Like, again, like Rob said, Stewart kind of cleared himself there. But then after the race, you see this scuffle afterwards. And, you know, even though, Rob, you don't like Nick Sanchez, and I don't necessarily love him either, I got to respect the level of trolling that he
did. Oh, yeah. 100%. Yeah.
And the fact that Stewart pulled that move after basically admitting that he fucked up, like, really was super confusing to me. But I got to go with Sanchez in this, and I'm a Friesen fan, so.
Yeah.
I got to go with neither of them because I don't like either one of them. So, again, I love when people I don't like don't like each other. It gives me great joy, and I enjoy it very much. But, yeah, I mean, I don't even think that Stewie really has anything to apologize for there. Like, it was pretty tight. That's kind of a racing incident at Bristol at the very end of a race, and, you know, the lane was open. Sanchez didn't have it. You know, you could argue both sides of this, but what it looked like to me is that Stewie just kind of slid up a little bit trying to block the lane when he thought he had time and he didn't, and, you know, that's racing at Bristol. It is what it is.
Yeah. But, again, the fact that
he didn't get his head busted open this time.
No. But laughing in his face, I love that. I gotta love it. Like,
yeah.
Really Stewart didn't hide behind a pile of tires like Matt Crafton and didn't jump out like some sort of fucking cartoon character. So that was cool.
Yep.
But,
so. But anyways, that was the truck race. Again, Sunday, I had no real idea that tires were potentially going to be an issue. Like, I just didn't pay attention to qualifying or practice the day before. And, I mean, it was after the second round of pit stops. Like, wait a second, something's fucking going on here. And everybody starts freaking out. And, you know, drivers are talking about red flag in the race and this, that, and the other thing. And it all worked out in the end. And it ended up being just a crazy race that was, again, even for us old school fans, like, we haven't seen that since the 90s, really, you know?
No, not at all. Having to save tires like that?
Yeah, no, and we'll talk about other tire issues later in the race. And this wasn't one of those deals where, like, anybody was at risk. Like, this, the drivers could tell when their tires were shit in the bed, and, you know, Bristol's not the most dangerous track. You know, even though we talked about someone else almost dying last week, a little bit different circumstances.
Yeah, well, they closed the gate up. So.
Yeah.
Oh, that's the video of the week, too. Yeah, a lot of dangerous shit actually happens at Bristol.
That's true, but regardless, this isn't Talladega or the Brickyard like we'll talk about later.
No, it's not.
And as you saw throughout the race, drivers were figuring it out. And, you know, the last runs, I think they were on 60-ish laps compared to starting out at 30. So this was one of those deals where the guys – there's a reason why all the guys up front were the old guys who had experience and knew what the hell to do with saving their tires. And a lot of younger guys didn't have that experience. So we'll never see a race like this again. They'll have it all figured out for the next time. And I think – one point that Denny was the most vocal about that didn't really get brought up as much as it should have was the track temperature. Everybody was talking about PJ1 and this, that, and the other thing, but he was the only. Yeah, it was. I mean, the track, I think he's, I don't know. They, normally when they go to Bristol, it's like 70, 80s, more than that at night. I don't know, it was 50, 60 on Sunday. So the track temperature was cold, and that's why it wasn't taking rubber. And, it was just, you know, we'll never see this again, so enjoy it while it lasts, and hopefully we'll see more cool shit with the short tracks later on. I think Richmond is the next big test of this new package, but nobody gives a shit about the package. Nobody gave a shit about aero bullshit. Like, people are just worried about keeping their cars on the track.
Which is, it's amazing to me that that was all it took, and obviously, like, it would be really hard for Goodyear to replicate that, since we've already used this tire at Bristol before and didn't have these issues because the temperature was high enough and there wasn't resin on the track. They're using resin and not PJ1. Apparently, that had something to do with it. But it was crazy to see how there was no rubber on the track on the bottom lane at all, or anywhere for that matter, but the huge, like, giant chunks of rubber just sitting up on the fence. Like, that was crazy.
Like, it was like a cushion
like that
there.
In my life. It was like a cushion, like, straight up. It was, that was incredible. But yeah, I had more fun watching that race. And I even watched it after the fact. And usually I have a hard time sitting down and watching races after I find out who the winner is. It's so hard to, like, ignore social media and people around you and all that. Like, you know what happens. There's no, if you miss it live, there's no saving it. So me and the band, we watched it in the bar down at the basement at my house on Monday night after practice. So before we headed up back out on the road, and that was the most fun I've had watching a NASCAR race this year. And it helps to have people down there who are interested, you know, but just the race itself, even like Tyler, our steel player, who's a very sweet baby boy, and I love him very much. He was like, this is fucking ridiculous. I was like, I know, right? It's not always like this.
Yeah, I had a few people that like aren't normal race fans text me about it. Like, what the hell's going on in this?
Like, yeah.
I don't fucking know either, man.
Yeah. I think about the only thing I really, the only like hot take I have about this is just how incredibly lucky NASCAR was to have this happen to them. Because I know a lot of people were really not looking forward to a lot of the short tracks because these cars are kind of dogs in a bad way. You know, yeah. They don't really operate all that well, and they don't, there's aero tight and cars can't get around each other. You know, we've bitched about it plenty on this show, but the fact that they were able to get this thing in the way they did and have it be so entertaining, especially after a series of races that were good on so many different configurations, boy, someone at NASCAR needs to go buy a fucking lottery ticket. Whoever, yeah. Steve O'Donnell needs to buy a lottery ticket. He doesn't need any more fucking money. But yeah, that's all I'll say. It's amazing to me that NASCAR got this one yet again, and hopefully this continues. Hopefully luck is on NASCAR's side for the rest of the year.
Yeah, I mean, it's hopefully nothing bad happens. I mean, again, it's a lot of racing to go. We're only what, 4 or 5 races in or whatever, but just one of the best starts in a very long time to a season, so I'm excited to see what else happens. But one thing we learned that is going to be happening in a few weeks at Darlington is Chase Elliott is going to be driving a Dale Jr. 2014 Daytona themed paint scheme for the throwback weekend. Now, it's fine. Like, it's a good normal throwback announcement. I mean, the car, for being only a 10-year-old paint scheme, I mean, it's weird to see that as a throwback already, but the car looks great. Unfortunately, yeah. The problem with how this was announced was Hendrick posted a little teaser video of what looked to be Dale Jr. tying his shoes. And that led to, obviously, a ton of different speculation as to what this could mean. Is Jr. getting back in a cup car, this, that, and the other thing? And unfortunately, we did kind of have our hopes somewhat limited. I think we all guessed it would probably be like a Kyle Larson scheme. I guess personally it would be like a throwback scheme to the first Martinsville win paint scheme. Either he runs at Martinsville or Darlington, whatever.
Yeah.
But no, everybody was kind of let down in the sense that, oh, Junior's not running. And who knows?
He was tying Chase Elliott shoes is what he was doing.
Yeah. I think one of the little tidbits that I think is still a loose end is it was noted that Kyle Larson has to qualify the weekend in North Wilkesboro at Indy, which is obviously a big deal. Does that mean he's not going to be able to run that car? If so, who's going to get in that car? I think we all would love to guess who that could be, but who knows? I mean, there's still weeks left of speculation, but Junior's having a really weird year. He still hasn't spoken about his choice to leave NBC. I figured he would have talked about that after his return from his vacation. Has not said a peep about it. He had Chase on today, which was, you know, fine, normal interview, and he's back to his normal stuff. But weird year for Junior. So who the hell knows could happen? But, you know, just hopes. I had my hopes up. I know a lot of other people did.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm happy with the paint scheme. That's one of my favorite NASCAR paint jobs of all time. And, I'm just happy with that. I don't really have a dog in that fight at all, so I'll hand it over to True Love. True Love.
Yeah, really.
I mean, I think it's a great paint scheme. I love when companies allow them to use colors that aren't their normal colors and just like
have this is a straight up National Guard scheme. Yeah.
Yeah. 100%. I already spent like $60 today buying shit, so.
Let me say, I have no problem with, I have no problem with the scheme. The car looks good. It's just more what we were all.
Well, I think Junior is, you know, I feel like he's been pretty clear that he has no interest in getting in a cup car until the concussion issues with the next gen car are fixed a little more.
It makes sense, but
we haven't seen one in a little bit, which has been nice.
And if any track would be a safe one for him to attempt, Wilkesboro would be one of those, theoretically. And especially, he's the main reason why this race is even happening. So again, it would make a lot of sense for him to get into a car that weekend, but who knows?
Especially with ticket sales being low and him not running Cars Tour that week.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen the schedule for Wilkesboro when the qualifying for Cup happens. It's at nighttime, right? I can't remember. Because I only say this because
Saturday night,
the gun fires at Indy at 6 p.m. out there, so that'd be 7 o'clock in North Carolina time. And if Larson's safely in the field, which he should be by that point, I don't see there really being a conflict just based on prior history with that, especially for an exhibition race. I think everybody wants to see Dale go out there and just run a few laps, and I would be all about that, but I don't think there's going to be any sort of conflict between the two. Again, I don't have the schedule in front of me, so I might be talking out of my ass, but historically
speaking, I hope you are, Rob.
Yeah. Historically speaking, Larson should be safely locked in the show. His car's really fast, or it should be really fast. I mean, stranger things have happened at Indy, but I'm sure they're banking on the fact that McLaren's going to bring him a good piece, and he'll be out of there in plenty of time to get to Wilkesboro and put a show on, so...
Yeah, well, we'll see. But what else happened? What else do we want to talk about? Somebody else bring up a topic before we get into the other stuff.
Well, I don't have a short track septic tank to really talk about right now. Again, I haven't had a chance to watch a lot of racing. I've been so busy with this tour and all the stuff around it. But Scott Blomqvist is back, folks. He's doing a full season. He's chasing the Hunt the Front title. Unfortunately, that's yet another another streaming service you have to pay for if you want to do it. It's a cool deal. I mean, Hunt the Front guys are cool. They do a lot of good work, and they're completely independent. They're not a major company like Flow or WRG that runs World of Outlaws, or Dirt Vision, that is. So it's good. It's cool to support them, but, yeah, it's another thing behind a paywall that you can't really watch. But it's kind of interesting because Blomqvist is heavily involved with the XR folks as well. Yeah. So he's doing a full season with another tour that has, to the best of my knowledge, is not linked up with them. But I don't know. Again, I don't have either of those services, so maybe they have a partnership. I don't know. I couldn't tell you. But he's back running the full season. That's fucking awesome. And he's already racing, but not a lot of people know about it because it's behind a paywall. So
yeah.
And unfortunately, that one doesn't show up on our special little link. Hunt the Front's a little bit outside of the realm of like the big short track stuff. So
I did look at their schedule, and they do run quite a few tracks that are closer to me. So maybe I can actually see that one in person.
It is a southern-based series, and they're really making an effort to take on, or at least fill a gap that the Lucas Oil series and the World of Outlaws do not. I mean, I don't know if we haven't talked about all the suspensions, right? Did we talk about tires last week, right?
All that news was still breaking. Did we talk about Hudson O'Neill last week?
Hudson O'Neill lost his ride. That was the other big surprise. That happened right after we did the podcast. I started getting texts from folks about Huddy not being in the Rocket One anymore, so that was pretty crazy. I won't divulge some of the funny stuff I heard, but
that's not there
anymore.
It's got to come
out. Tim McCready is going to be taking that ride, which is pretty cool. I've heard some cool things about where Hudson O'Neill might end up. He's a good driver, or good enough anyway, so I'm sure that'll come out in due time. But yeah, that's probably the biggest news imaginable. And this whole suspension tire thing is going to ripple through the entire season. Stay tuned, folks. But yeah, not much of a septic tank this week, but yeah, mostly dirt late model stuff. And again, I'm looking forward to trying to watch some racing this weekend, but I know how that goes when I'm out here. I'm playing shows and drinking beer by the time anything starts. So it's all highlights for me, folks.
Yep. I know we talk a lot of shit on F1 on here for lots of different valid reasons, but I got a positive thing to mention. I got a new favorite driver, and I'm going to completely mispronounce his name, but is it Yaltari Bottas? I don't know how to pronounce his name.
Yaltari, that's awesome.
I don't know how to fucking...
Yaltari Bottas. He pronounced...
I'm trying.
Start with a V.
He kind of pronounces it funny.
Valtteri Bottas. Yeah.
Okay. So, anyways, he's my new favorite driver.
Mine too, I guess. Shit.
He just came out with this this Uber commercial for Uber Australia, and basically he calls Australia his second home, and he has this car there, and it's this car decked out with all this ridiculous shit, and it might be the funniest, maybe top five funniest like racing related commercials I've ever seen. Absolutely love it. Like, just brilliant comedic timing. Dude looks ridiculous. He's got this insane mullet. Apparently he's actually a pretty cool dude, like outside the track. I've been getting some articles and shit from a couple different friends, and he's my new guy. He, you know,
he's a Finn. He's got the sort of Kimi Räikkönen thing going on, the cultural kind of cool, and he also gets shit faced in parties. And if you watch Drive to Survive, you can see his ass if that's what you're into. Which some people are. So
Real quick,
before we move on, I just got some shit to talk.
I was just going to say, maybe I might have to actually watch Drive to Survive just to get more of his.
But see, I think you can just Google a picture of that.
Exactly. Yeah. Good old Yaltari, my favorite. All right. Well, yeah, that's it. That's all I had to say.
I just want to – my DARF of the week is going to be our buddy Cornbread Cowboy, Ori Lee, for that last shotgun he laid out there at Bristol.
Oh.
I was joking with my friends that the reason why the rubber wasn't sticking because he spilt his beer all over the fucking TJ1. It's too wet out there. But, man, do not –
flooded the infield.
In the middle. What the fuck, bro?
Yeah, that was one of the
almost sunk his entire brand in one thing. So, yeah, I'm glad he's in the NASCAR. I'm glad he shines a light on it. You know, if we had him a little bit. He's all right, but it's just Jesus fucking Christ, dude. Like, come on.
The comment section on that post was great, too. So,
yeah, it was a, you know, there's not a lot that will unite Americans right now. You know, there's a lot of opinions and feelings and ideas that are, you know, people are butting heads right now, but the entirety of the racing world and beyond rallied behind the fact that this dude cannot shotgun a beer. And it was fucking hilarious. So, I hope he sets the camera up, and instead of putting a video on the internet, he actually uses it to film videos instead of practicing. Watch the tape, figure out what you did wrong, and come back strong. But yeah, Jesus Christ, that's my DARF of the week, Ori. I'm sorry, buddy. That's fucking terrible.
We're not mad. We're just disappointed.
I'm incredibly disappointed.
Yeah, that was bad. All right. Well, since we're moving along here, we'll get to the video of the week segment. Now, we didn't have one last week because I wasn't really prepared, but I decided to pick a topical subject this week and talk about the Brickyard 400 disaster of 2008.
A lot of new fans might not be aware of this whole deal.
And we'll talk about a couple different tire things here. So I know people. At least when the tire issue started on Sunday, people were really worried, like, this was going to be a complete shit show. Thankfully, it was a shit show in an amazing way, but people were worried this was going to be a safety thing. The cars weren't going to be able to run. People were going to run out of tires. But thankfully, no, it all worked out for the best. However, there's been multiple times in the past where these types of things did not work out. The Brickyard 400 from 2008 is the video we're going to talk about, but even some more history first. I think most people have a good idea. You know, if you're familiar with the 90s at all in NASCAR, you're familiar with the tire wars of Goodyear and Hoosier. That was a time period where people lost their lives. And you want to talk about tire issues. Multiple times, drivers had to switch tires from week to week because one week Hoosier had a bad tire, the next week Goodyear had a bad tire. And again, people were getting hurt. You know, it's argued that Rodney Orr and Neil Bonnett lost their lives due to tires at Daytona in 94.
Yeah, that's probably the safest guess. But.
Yeah, it's a lot of bad shit happened. So, again, not the first time this has happened. In 1969, the first ever Talladega race, there were massive tire issues that led to a walkout by most of the field. If you go back to the history and look at that race, it was a very dark dark mark on the history of NASCAR.
And in case you're wondering how NASCAR feels about unionizing, that's also a little answer there.
Yeah, that's another big part of the story. In 2008, there was a NASCAR problem, but 2005 at Indianapolis, there was a tire problem with F1 that actually fucked up F1's popularity in the U.S. and for a very long time. It wasn't until Drive to Survive that the series started to pick back up.
They really that was really a black eye on the sport in general in an international sense, and that's why we have a single tire supplier in F1 now. Pirelli has been there for a long time, and they don't have as many issues as Bridgestone did, but yeah. That was such a shit show. For those of y'all who don't know how that went down, there was a tire war between Bridgestone and Michelin, and the six cars on Bridgestone's, which was an inferior tire. Maybe I'm getting the tire brands mixed around. Sorry, I don't have notes in front of me.
But Michelin was the bad one.
So Michelin was having load issues on the new surface. They just repaved Indianapolis with a new diamond cut surface. And then the big oval turn they would use, which they still use for the IndyCar race there when they run the road course, was causing tires to blow and having some fantastic wrecks. And the FIA and the teams were unable to come to an agreement to do something about it, which was putting a chicane in one part. There was talks about speed limits, or even the Bridgestone runners, were okay with even coming in and changing tires and running behind the Bridgestone runners, essentially surrendering a race just to put on the show for the fans. But no agreement was met, and the race actually started with only six cars. So it was two Ferraris, a couple of Minardis, and the Jordans, and it was a huge fucking mess. And like Brian said, Formula One didn't really recover for a long time. It took the Netflix series to really push it to the level it's at now, and that includes new ownership, a whole regime change. It was real bad. And then fast forward to NASCAR in 2008 or 2009, whatever it was.
So obviously different circumstances than what F1 went through, but still sort of a similar result. NASCAR 2008 had the Car of Tomorrow debut, which don't even need to get into how big of a mess that was, but that car did not work. The car and that tire that year did not work on the surface, and this led this led to multiple blowouts. Now, NASCAR or Goodyear only did one tire test with Dale Jr. and I believe Kurt Busch prior to this. They had very little experience with this car on this track with this tire, and going into the race, drivers knew this was going to be a problem. They didn't know how big of a problem it was going to be, because within 15 laps, drivers started having massive blowouts. Dale Jr. being one of the first. Thankfully, he didn't wreck, but he was one of the first to get a flat that race. Real quick, though, this video that we picked, if you go on YouTube and you search for this particular race, you're going to find at least a half dozen different video essays from different YouTubers out there. This one is just it's a quick 10-minute race footage only highlight reel of a lot of different chaos that happened that day. But this race was kind of like F1 did a lot of damage to NASCAR for a lot of years.
Similar.
Yeah, I mean, after those first blowouts started happening, NASCAR started mandating pit stops mandatory cautions every 10 laps to check the tires, because it was proven that these tires would only last 10 to 12 laps. And unlike Bristol, where the drivers had a very clear warning as to when the tire was going to go bad, these things would just explode out of nowhere. For instance, there's a very wild explosion of Matt Kenseth's car on the backstretch. The rear tire explodes and completely rips out the quarter panel. Like, it's gone.
Yeah.
Like, ruins the car just from a flat. This type of stuff was happening.
Not to mention, the speeds are so much higher than what we saw at Bristol. And when you lose a tire at Indianapolis going 190 miles an hour and you hit that fence pretty much head on, it's because it's a fucking rectangle, you know?
No ugly. Cars were destroyed at Bristol to the point where they couldn't race anymore, except when Zane Smith had Arca brakes.
Which is a totally different story.
Not the tire's fault, but
But yeah, I mean, this race, aside from just being an awful race to watch, nobody was happy when that race was over with. One thing I'll give credit to in the F1 debacle, Michelin did a good job of refunding everybody. They gave tickets to other races. Like, they did their best to make up for the
good.
NASCAR didn't do this. everybody left the track pissed off. Refunds weren't given. This race in 2008, attendance was around 250,000, Within 5 years, it was down to 70,000. That's how badly this damaged the sport. And there's many different arguments as to when the decline of NASCAR from its early mid-2000s peak happened. I think it's inarguable. This is one of the big reasons why it did such damage. And I'll admit that this was during my lapsed period of fandom. You know, I paid attention, but I, you know, I checked in here and there, but I was not following every week like I do now. And
It was certainly the death of Indianapolis as a legitimate fan favorite for NASCAR fans. And the stands, again, that's a huge fucking, someone's fired up a motorcycle, that thing's sick. What's up, Milk Jug? What's up? But yeah, I mean, that race was a sellout, or close to it, from 94 up until this happened. And right after that, the attendance dropped so sharply that, I mean, again, they raced the road course for a few years because it was so bad.
Yeah. And the racing was bad too. Let's not discount that.
Like, the racing at Indy was never remarkable to begin with. It was it's always a lot of strategy and that sort of thing. But yeah, this was sort of the final nail in the coffin. It was a bad, real bad race.
Really
nobody
bad.
Liked it.
So I mean, that's really all there is to say. And going into the return to the Oval in 2024, I don't anticipate this happening. Big tracks, the intermediates, there haven't been these issues, and obviously there won't be anything like what happened at Bristol, but I think
this track's going to be hot and slick as fuck. The tires are not going to have any issue putting rubber down there, unless it's, I know, the world is changing, so who knows, maybe it'll be 45 degrees when we go to Indianapolis, but I really doubt that.
Yeah, I doubt that.
July.
Yeah, exactly.
A balmy 45 degrees Celsius, you know.
So, yeah, I guess this was just a history lesson for those who... Because there were a few fans, like my buddy Mike, he was just like, "What the fuck is with these tires? Like, they got to fix this." And like, dude, you're witnessing history here. You'll never see something this cool again. But now you know what it's like when tires actually are a real fucking problem. So
to circle back to what I said earlier, like, this is sort of the flip side of the coin to what happened at Bristol and why I say NASCAR got really lucky there and they ended up with a good race. This is the what happened in Indianapolis was the complete polar opposite and just exactly how bad it could go. And I mean, the race at Bristol, there was a good chance that a couple more cautions and they would have run out of tires. Like, a lot of teams, Booty Barker was on the radio with Bubba saying that they don't think they had enough tires to finish the race if things continued the way they were. They didn't have that long green flag run where everyone kind of refigured their strategy and got things back on track, and it was like 90 or 100 laps or something where they didn't have a caution. We might be having a different conversation. So it's interesting how much luck pays into these sort of things, because that could have been bad too. But I'm glad we ended up with a classic at Bristol. And shame that Indianapolis lost its prestige as a result of this.
Yeah. But we won't have to worry about that this year. It'll probably be an interesting race, so nothing to worry about.
One thing I forgot to mention about Bristol, and again, I had my buddy Brady downstairs in the basement with me, who is a NASCAR fan, not quite as obsessive as I am, but he's really into it, and our steel player, who is not a fan at all. The brake fires that were happening on pit road.
Mm-hmm.
How intense was that? Like, just visually, as somebody who may not have seen a short track race before, and watching like rubber on fire and brake rotors just literally like flaming while these guys are sticking their hands into the wheel well. Like, Tyler, our steel player, was like, "Is this for real?" I'm like, "Yeah, this is amazing, right?" He's like, "These guys are fucking monsters," and that's exactly what we all happen at all these short track races. And what a breath of fresh air! I hope.
It gave me a little glimmer of hope.
I think some of my new fans might not have liked it, but again, like, watch this Indianapolis video and you can kind of see, you know, it hasn't always been all roses and people are always going to complain and things are not always going to end up that way. And you enjoy it while you can, and especially enjoy getting to see something as old school as Bristol was.
Yep. Now, moving into this weekend, we're going to do this next episode. We're not going to do a video of the week. It's something a little bit different this week.
You're going to send us videos. I was kidding.
I was sent this by a few different people, mainly friends who are more into music than I am these days. There's a band called Gasoline that put out a new album called I Am the Intimidator. And it is about Dale Earnhardt. It is apparently a concept album about Dale Earnhardt, and it's six songs.
A power metal record about Dale Earnhardt.
Six songs, a half hour long. And I'm going to read in the artist's own words. What's his name here? Andrew Stromstad. This is what he set out to do with this record. I grew up worshipping NASCAR. There was a fire meme about Dale Earnhardt that said, turn left for mediocrity, turn right for immortality, and it stuck with me forever. Originally, I set out to make something humorous in nature, but then I watched a few Dale Earnhardt documentaries and found myself as the butt of the joke instead. There was a reason why he was revered and worshipped. He was a man of the people. He defied odds. He destroyed barriers. His ego was not indicative of his influence. He was as real as anyone can come. Once I came to that understanding, it was no longer a joke. It was a tribute to one of the greatest men to ever rock, to ever walk and roll this earth, Dale Earnhardt. And I hope passerbys understand this outpouring of love. So we're going to listen to this record, and I'm going to take notes. Apparently, there's some lore involved with this. It's
metal, of course there is. Yeah.
Were you going to say something, True Love?
I don't know, just how excited I am.
So it's on Spotify. this is on Spotify, so you can all listen to it. I mean, it's anywhere. It's on YouTube, so probably.
We'll post a link to it in the show notes too.
For sure. So you can listen to it yourself, and I'm excited because I have not listened to a second of this, and now that I've read what's behind this, I'm very excited to see what it's all about. And the cover art's pretty cool. Pull it up here real quick. It is a guy in a Dale Earnhardt driver's seat jacket in a helmet holding a sword. So that's pretty cool. I don't know where I'm for, folks.
I'm to a great fucking start. So yeah.
Real quick, here's the track list: Gasoline, No Regrets, Eat My Smoke, I Am the Intimidator, and I Am Here Now. So six tracks. I'm very excited. I'll be listening to this tomorrow. So yeah, listen along with us.
No, as long as there's a Mikey Waltrip arc in there, I'll enjoy that. So.
I don't know if
acoustic track or some shit.
I don't know if this guy knows the story like
me. Yeah, I don't know how deep in the lore he is.
But I'll send him an email.
Yeah, I was gonna say maybe we'll get a
bonus track.
We'll get a romantic love ballad.
Yeah. I would love that. So. Yeah.
So NASCAR is in Texas this weekend at COTA.
Cool.
I mean, no matter what race was following Bristol, it'd be tough to follow.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
This one's going to be a tough one to follow. So,
but hey, listen, like people really loved the race last year. That was a great finish. You know, as much as I don't like the bumper car thing, it is exciting. So we'll see some cool shit. Kamui Kobayashi's racing. You know, there's definitely a lot of sort of outside influence here because COTA is what NASCAR usually goes to, even in context with the road courses. So it's always interesting. So you got to take your meds, True Love.
Yeah, it is actually my meds. Meemaw. Meemaw.
Meemaw's gotta take her pills. Yeah.
My paid meds. Yeah.
There's a lot of short track racing this weekend, too. Lucas Oil Late Models are at Atomic in Brownstown this weekend. Also, the Smart Modifieds are in South Boston. I'm very annoyed I'm going to be in the same borders as the South Boston race, but I'll be playing a show instead, which is, you know, that's fine. It's what I do. I make money off of it, and I very much enjoy it, but fuck, I'd love to go to that race. So if you're down there, drink a beer for me. And also, a real quick shout out. I meant to mention this in the abridged short track septic tank, but there were a lot of tornadoes in Ohio. Brian made it out okay because Cleveland doesn't really have weather other than wind and toxic dust storms.
I was driving, I told you guys, I was driving up the western side of the state on Friday when all that shit was happening, and it really nothing anywhere near me, thankfully. Like, I was, just a little bit of rain, so.
No tracks really received any major damage. I think Winchester really got lucky, but a lot of teams got their shit completely rocked. A lot of, teams, just blue-collar guys and gals making it happen with whatever money they have to go out and do it, lost everything. So I'm going to try and see if I can find any anything like that, and I'll post links to them. You can also Google it yourself. But yeah, a lot of folks really got fucked up by all these storms, a lot of racing families. So keep them in your thoughts. And if you can help out, I'll try to do what I can to point you in the right direction to give those folks a hand. Because that's a damn shame. It's a blow to lose your house and all that stuff. Obviously, that supersedes everything else. But to have your passion get taken away with it, that's got to be an extra blow. And, you know, this is a cool community, and we try to help each other out. So I'll do what I can to try and find some folks who might need some help and point you in their direction if that's something you'd be interested in doing. But at the very least, just think about them. And, yeah, that's all.
Buy T-shirts always. They're going to have T-shirts for sale. Yeah. So.
Yeah.
But yeah, True Love, you got anything else? I got nothing coming up. I think Attica's opening the 6th of April, so as long as weather's good, I'm going to be at that for sure. So
hell yeah, buddy. That's awesome.
What about you, True Love? Oh, you're just recovering.
I'm
you can't
still
really
just
much.
Recovering for a little bit. I think
True Love can't eat anything but soup right now, so
yeah, it fucking sucks. I'm so over liquids. But I think IndyCar has a $1 million race this weekend.
Oh, that's right. They're at Thermal Club. That'll be interesting.
Yeah. I guess it's the first time they're doing that.
Thermal Club is a big rich guy playground that has a beautiful road course in the middle of it. People just have houses that surround it, and you can rent it out. And or if you're a rich guy that has a lot of money, you can just drive your little GT car right out of your driveway onto a racetrack, apparently. And IndyCar is doing a non-points challenge there. It should be a cool race. The facility is really nice. Very much of a fan-friendly event, although they did open up more tickets, and IndyCar did do a cool thing where when they first announced this event, the tickets were like $300-$400, and they were very limited to get into. Maybe it was even more than that. But they got clearance to add more people by the local government, and so they opened up more tickets at a cheaper price, and they actually refunded people who already bought tickets the difference. So that's a shout to them for doing that. Speaking of doing things for the fans when things change, I'd be pissed if I paid $500 for something that cost $150.
Yeah.
It'll be a cool race. But again, it's a $1 million challenge. I don't really care about exhibition races, but, you know, I got a long van ride to sit on that day, so I will definitely watch it.
Cool. Well, yeah, I'll be watching Coda and whatever else this weekend. So, and I'll probably watch the IndyCar race. $1 million, people will pull some shit for that. So, we'll see.
That'll be cool.
Yeah. Well, folks, as always, you can follow us at Meet Me at Applebee's on Instagram and Meet Me at the Bees on Twitter. I am Speedway Screens on all the things and SpeedwayTSJ.com. Go harass True Love to sell you something so she can buy more.
Chase Elliott merch.
Chase Elliott merch and
Chase Elliott throwback merch.
And, soup.
Yeah, soup. Two pain meds, all that stuff.
For the Campbell's budget. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. And Rob, you're on tour this weekend. You're going to be at the Thirsty Beaver tomorrow. As we,
tonight. If you're listening to this right now, tonight I'll be at the Thirsty Beaver in Charlotte. It's going to be an absolute banger. These Wild Planes, my band. I'm also playing drums for Charlie Marie, who's on the show. God, she's so fucking good. She's so good. so come see that. Also, Brady Heck is opening the show. He's playing bass for us. He's a good guy. And he's a great songwriter, too. So make sure you come out. 8:30 tonight is when music kicks off, and we'll go until I can't stand anymore because I've been drinking Johnny Bootlegger. Night after that, we're at Richmond, currently at Get Tight Lounge. There's a chance it might get moved because of the rain to an indoor venue, but it looks like that might be that might not happen. So Get Tight Lounge is where it's happening. We're with McKenzie Rourke there as well as our package. And then on Saturday night, I'll be at Dirty Nelly's in Charlottesville. Again, I know there are some listeners out there. And if you want to come out, shoot me a message. I'll get you into the show. But just, shoot us a DM, and I'll do what I can if you do want to come out and hang out, have a beer, and talk some racing, especially on Saturday night.
Yeah, buy Rob a beer though. He's a touring musician, you know. Treat him
right. I don't have any fucking money, so.
And speaking of which,
apologies for. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead. Finish your. Trust me. Finish it.
I was just going to apologize. This is a bit of an abridged episode here. It's a little shorter than or abbreviated rather. It's an abbreviated episode. I didn't have time to prep show notes or anything like that. We got a show out to you guys, so thanks for listening. We really appreciate that. And we'll be back to sort of a when I'm back on Earth next week. But anyway.
Anyway, so with that, the check is here. Rob's van's about to get towed. So we'll talk to you next week.